Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us on a special edition of Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts, Blood in the Water. This was one of the most painful and horrific episodes to be a part of this season. Certainly, when you investigate different parts of history, you understand that you're going to come up against our brutal beginnings. But there wasn't much that could prepare us for what we saw and encountered during this investigation. We're going to get into that in a little bit with a very special guest. You saw her tonight on the episode. And to bring the Native American perspective and history to the story, I wanted to make sure she could join us. And we'll be taking your questions a little bit later. Tyree Gould Jacinto will be joining me in just a few moments to talk about what we all just watched and witnessed. Part of the honor of doing this show is in exploring history. I was excited to stand in this house, to go to this location that had such an instrumental pivoting point in American history. The Conference House, as it's known, for this three-hour meeting when Rutledge, Adams, and Benjamin Franklin, at the behest of George Washington, were asked to go meet with the king's representatives to try to mediate peace. George Washington was still embroiled in the war and was unable to go. Because he trusted these men, he threw to them and he said, "You have this responsibility to do the right thing, and I'll back whatever your decision is." And that's powerful. Washington believed in the representatives. Rutledge, Adams, and Franklin, although not always on the same side of different issues, stood strong that day. Now, there are a few interesting aspects of that part of history, and I do want to mention that because it's something I think is, I've never heard this story. 53 years old, I went through school, I went through college, I never heard this story. And it, to me, is a fascinating aspect of history that also might tie in. Remember, Cindy saw the blindfolded man. Well, at one point, they sent, if you will, a hostage to Franklin. And it was explained to Franklin, "I'm here to assure your safety." And Franklin laughed and he said, "My good man, go back aboard the ship. We're gentlemen. We can have this discussion and there doesn't need to be this." So I didn't know if the blindfolded man might relate to that story. So the man went back aboard. The king's men came aboard and they said, "Franklin, you're a gentleman. We appreciate that." They all met there, had this large meal, and had a discussion that could have changed the history of America. I mean, just imagine this. They come in to talk and break bread, to drink and discuss what should come next. The Americas were supposed to be part of Britain. They were supposed to be the new territory for the king. But once we came here, we stood tall. We wanted new lives, new rules, new regulations. And the king's men said, "Listen, Franklin, we respect you. We like you." He had worked with this gentleman, the liaison that they had sent forward. And Franklin said, "You know, this is all well and good, but we're a new country and we need to make these steps to go forward for ourselves." And they bribed or attempted to bribe Rutledge, Adams, and Franklin with titles. You could be dukes, you could be, you know, whatever. They were going to give them titles. They were going to give them money. They were going to let them be kind of prefects of certain areas here in the Americas. And Franklin said, "No, we're not going to settle for that. We're going to settle for the United States." And Rutledge and Adams stood by his side and they turned away these representatives. And the representative said, "Well, we are going to win. And when we win, you will pay the ultimate price. You will be killed. And everyone you love will be killed." And it was a brutal threat. And Franklin said, "Well, if that's the way this history needs to go, then so it shall be." And he said, "But we're not changing. We're not leaving. This is our world now." And that to me was a fascinating aspect of history. That story being related to me. And unfortunately, we couldn't get that deep into that history because, again, the haunting had nothing to do with that three-hour period. But I wanted to play that part up to you because I think it's an important aspect of how we review history. This location has been there for hundreds of years. For tens of thousands of years, it was populated by the Native Americans, the indigenous peoples of that area, in a peaceful way. There were waterways and travelways. It was good growing place, good places to fish. It was a perfect utopia almost. And we'll talk more about that with our guest in a few moments. But all this place is known for now is one three-hour window. And it's an important three-hour window on September 11th, which we know here in the United States is a very powerful date. I didn't even know that September 11th, 1776 had another layer of importance to our country. So that to me was a fascinating angle to the story. And hearing bits and pieces from different people about the history of this location. Now, watching tonight and live tweeting as we do every week, I saw a lot of hatred and anger being devised towards the caretakers of the conference house. First of all, I want to assure you they are absolutely lovely people. They are very intelligent, very loving, and they care about the history. And they were cautious with what information they would give because they've seen the damage that's been done before. And what you don't know is that those lands have been molested repeatedly to find treasures. Treasures to some are the remains of the ancient ones and what they were buried with no regard to their lives, to their history, and their traditions. So I was very impressed with the fact that they wanted to keep this secret. They insisted on keeping the secret. They wanted to make sure that this didn't get turned into a three-ring circus of people coming and trying to dig things up at night or do things. And they know very well because Juan spoke to me on the record, but out of respect for them, we didn't say where. He told me where bodies had been located on that property and things had been moved to show respect for the ancestors. And you know, to me, that was an important part of the story that I don't want people to jump over. A lot of our history is whitewashed. There's no doubt about it. A lot of things are put away in neat little compartmentalized units to try to make America and its forefounders and its settlers sound amazing. And we overlook a lot of the tragedy that took place. But tonight, we peeled back the veneer of history and uncovered something much darker. Another part of our history that does exist, that did exist. And, you know, there were also people saying, oh, see, well, it was truly the British that are to be blamed for this, not the Americans, because it was the British coming back in, trying to settle that and take over this land. And they got bored and didn't want to wait for a peaceful transition that they took charge. But what it really comes down to is still the settlers, the people of that time, not everyone, but the people of that time. And many lives were lost in horrific and indescribable ways. There was a lot to unpack in tonight's episode, a lot of history and a lot of mystery and the paranormal. So many interesting facts, you know, parts that you didn't hear, you know, about the gentleman there who lived there at one point. And he and his brother would hear things and see things and experience things. And, it, you know, the one-armed soldier, Armby, and some of the other activity that had taken place there. When we met the caretakers, they were lovely and they were very sweet people. You know, Juan, when I first met him and I stood in front of him at a cautious distance because, of course, COVID, I looked at Juan and I said, Juan, so what do you do here at the conference house? And he looked me dead in the eye, seriously, and he said, I pick things up and I put them down and whatever else my wife tells me to do. And from that moment on, he just won us over with his charm. But he, as you saw during the reveal of tonight's show, when we pushed and we confronted and we let them know we knew the history, it almost brought, well, I think it did bring tears to his eyes, although he didn't openly weep. I remember watching his eyes gloss over because he wants the truth to be told. I love the fact that he's a skeptic. But yet he comes in and shows respect to the ancestors, to the spirits of the home, to the spirits that have come before him. And that, I think, is why they are excellent caretakers to this property. But let's take a look at the rest of the history of this property. And we'll talk about some of the aspects of our investigation. And in my opinion, one of the most chilling communications in all my years of investigating I've ever had. We'll discuss that. But first, I would like to introduce you to our guest this evening. And she was kind enough to stay up late with us to come on the show and spend some time here. Thank you so much, Ty, for being here late with us this evening to talk about your story and your tribe's history.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for, I really appreciate it. It was a very moving show. I'm very emotional right now. So, I can understand that. You know, I'm very emotional, very emotional.
And I'd like not just to be the definitive word on everything I just said, but you know the caretakers of the conference house. You know that they're good people. I just wanted your thoughts on that as well so that our viewers and listeners around the world can take something away from that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a piece of history, and being a caretaker is a huge responsibility. So, you know, there's no fault in anybody now. Bringing this story to light is what's going to help. It's going to help bring peace to the area and maybe bring peace to the caretakers. You know, at first I didn't understand either, so I understand where, you know, where some of the viewers were coming from. But, you know, in the end, when they said that they were protecting the ancestors, and the bones, you know, that made sense. So,
right. A lot of viewers may not know this, but there were, at different points in history, there were rewards given to people that would come in with Native American skulls and yes. bones, and they were paid handsomely yes. for them. So much of the area had been desecrated before.
Yes. And we were treated as commodities.
Right. Yeah. Now, let's go before when we were talking about the Dutch settlers. They had, from my understanding and the historians we spoke to, they had a very simpatico relationship where it was trade. And they tried to convey to the indigenous people the trade of blankets and food and trinkets for this land. And the tribes accepted these gifts, not understanding the whole concept, if I understand this right, of giving land, because it was no one's land to give.
Correct. We don't have the concept of owning land. So we were taking it as gifts. You know, little did we know that, you know, less than 100 years later that we would have no place to live or, you know, be forced into the taxation and buy back some place where we lived freely. So we had no concept. We still don't have any concept. You can't own land. You can't take it with you. Right. You know, when you die, who owns the land? You don't. So, you know, it's the earth is here for all of us to share. There's imaginary lines only. The map has imaginary lines. There's freedom to walk from all parts of the globe. No man can own anything on this earth because you can't take it with you. We're spiritual beings.
Now, let's talk about the ugly aspects of this story. When things finally turned and you had the military might at that point decide, you know what, they're not leaving fast enough. The brutality of this story in history, I don't want to give excuse for hiding it. I understand to an element of why we don't want to discuss it, because no one wants to face the brutality that we were part of. To butcher women and children and keep them separated from the men of the tribe as they watch their spouses and children and loved ones die and thrown into the water. I can't even begin to comprehend the horrors that this peaceful people witnessed during that time.
You know, some of the true accounts of that time, they said that infants were torn from their mother's breast and hacked into pieces. Okay. And in the presence of their parents, and the pieces were thrown in the fire and in the water, and other sucklings that were being, they were bound to small cradle boards, were cut and stuck and pierced and miserably massacred. So, you know, these are accounts, these are true accounts of that time, but these are things that we're going to find in our history book. And the only way I think that we're going to be able to heal or begin to heal is to bring this story to light and to let people know that, you know, the energy is still in that land. The energy is still there. The energy never leaves. And in order to replace the energy, the bad energy, is to replace it with good energy. And there's no other way to do that except for recognize what happened.
And telling the truth.
And telling the truth, yes.
You know, history is often the words of the victor. And, you know, they turned it into these savages would attack us. We had to protect ourselves in order to have this land. They turned a peaceful people and a negotiable situation that had worked well for many years into something heinous in order to qualify the actions that they took.
Yes.
And I'm sure there was an uprising. I'm sure that the Lenni Lenape tribe, who were peaceful, took up arms and did try to fight and try to battle to save their culture, their people, their land. Even though it wasn't their land, the place that they called home.
Correct.
But it wasn't in this savagery that we've been led to believe, thanks to, you know, Hollywood Western movies with, you know, the savage Indian tribes that you had to be careful of. It was because we had infringed upon them, taken so much from them through the time. But there was blood. History, in this case, it threw us for a loop. We went with one concept of what we came to explore was this house that was so integral to American history. But the ancestors knew that the story wasn't inside those four walls. And I mean, the hairs on my arm are standing up as I think about this. When I was down, and just to give people perspective, when I was down in that basement area, that is underground. There is no way that on the bricks in front of me where I was standing, something could be scratching unless it was buried in the ground. And that was a much longer portion. We were down in that area for about a half an hour, off and on, making communication. And I would talk to our cameraman, Rob, and I couldn't pry. I'm like, am I hearing this, Rob? I mean, let's just be quiet and see if there's any sound. And there would be nothing. And then I would ask a question, and I would get an immediate response with the scraping noise. And all I could visualize was just this hand clawing at the wall to recognize our connection and tell us the story is not there. The story is the land. You need to be outside. This is where you're going to get this information. And again, chilling that as I'm getting that confirmation, you want us to go outside? Cindy is suddenly struck with, I need to go outside. Something's calling me outside. Is our medium two floors above me? And I'm quiet down in the basement because I'm trying not to cause a stir for everybody else. She realizes we need to go outside. This is something much bigger than this home. And we went outside. And yes, there are spirits there. There are spirits of soldiers that lost their lives unceremoniously and were tossed out like waste to be buried in the ground that was so important to your people. And like it said throughout it, these are not our ancestors that you're burying amongst us, you know. And to see that whole apple cart had been upset in so many ways, Ty, it's heartbreaking to be a part of something like that. But it was also exhilarating in the fact that these spirits, they were going to make sure that their story would be heard, understood, and hopefully brought forward. And watching the response tonight, I think we got a crack in the shell. Many people saw this and saw it for the horror that it really was. And I hope they'll speak about this and share this. And man, I hope there are teachers that were talking to me during this. I hope they take this episode and show it in class and teach this so that they can show somebody's discussing this. But when we were called outside, was that a surprise to you that your ancestors would reach out to us of all people to go out to get these answers?
You know, it was a surprise, but I'm not surprised. You know, watching all the shows that you want to bring truth to light, and it's not something that you're just looking for ghosts. You want to find why. So because you want to know why, they came to you. In all sincerity, they came to you to tell you, we're trying to tell our story. And you want to listen, and we know that you're going to be the one to tell the story.
Well, that is a burden that we were very happy to be given. And I'm just thankful that they could sense our sincerity to try to tell this story. And I'm glad that we were able to find you to help bring this story back together so that we had something to say when we went back to talk to the docents and the caretakers of that property and to see their almost look of relief that this isn't just a burden they had to carry any longer. This wasn't a secret that they had to try to protect, but that we promised them we would protect it. We would not say where there were bodies that are known on that property. We wouldn't say where the exact area of the burial ground was. We respected that. And we also respected that we wouldn't go. We kept talking about a stone's throw. Cindy kept picking up on the stone's throw. It could be taken many ways. One, that it was the water, which was a stone's throw from the house, which were this horrific thing took place. But the burial ground is very near there and has been raped through the years. So we elected not to specifically go. You know, your first internal dialogue as an investigator is, Let's go to the burial ground.
Right.
And then there was this overwhelming sense of no. And our cast and crew, and I got to give it to our production team because they're trying to put on a show that's going to be exciting and exhilarating. Right. And to go to the cemetery, to the burial grounds.
It's the first thing you want to do.
And they were like, if you guys don't feel it, we don't feel it. Let's not go there. Let's not show that disrespect. Enough has been done to these people. And that made me again. Proud to be a part of the show.
Yeah.
Because all the people working on it care about telling the truth and showing respect to the people that came before us.
Yeah.
I'd like to know the concept of ghosts, of course, has been around since the beginning of time.
Right.
How do the indigenous tribes look at ghosts and spirits? Are these really reflections or pieces of us that have been left behind, or is it something else?
I will tell you that we have a high respect for the spirit world. And the reason we think of ourselves as we're a body and a soul and a spirit, and the spirit world, we highly regard the spirit world, but it's all about vibration and it's all about the breath. And with the vibration and the breath, we're all connected. It's not that we worshiped trees, but we understood that the trees were living and vibrated and would breathe. And that we're all one with any elements on this earth, anything that the Creator has made. So the spirit world, since we all vibrate energy, we know energy can never be destroyed or created. It's still with us. We still vibrate. And we respect the spirit world. We do not ever try to conjure spirits or look to spirits, because we know there are good spirits. We know there are bad spirits. And we know that every animal has a spirit. Every body part has a spirit that's in charge of it. Every emotion has a spirit. And we know to discern those spirits and to recognize those spirits. And that's why, you know, sometimes you'll hear people saying that, you know, we have a spirit animal. That's only because you're similar to the spirit of that animal. Not that we worship the animal or not that the animal guides us. So we're very spiritual people. And there, you know, since energy never leaves, you know, the ancestors are with us. The ancestors run through our water. They run through our soil. They run through our plants. You know, when you eat a piece of fruit, you're eating a piece of the ancestor that's in that soil. You know, when you eat a piece, when you eat vegetables or, you know, when you eat land animals that have eaten the grass, it's all recycled. So all the energy, nothing leaves. You are your ancestors. So, you know, that's why I feel that, you know, the ancestors, there was so much bloodshed there. And, you know, just babies thrown in the water and the parents thrown in, you know, in the water and they weren't allowed to come back out. Their spirits are still there. They're still, the energy is still there. And, you know, until it's put to, you know, at peace, there's going to be sightings and hauntings and maybe hopefully this works, you know, bringing it to light.
Do you think that because we are all one energy, because we are interconnected with the ground, the air, the sky, the water, the trees, that these are not necessarily the spirits of your ancestors in the sense we think of I die, out pops my spirit and walks the earth. Are these projections of the earth of the things that were important to it? Are these projections of those aspects of our humanity, our nature, our connectivity?
Well, you know, if you think of there's a spirit in charge of every emotion, you know, our decisions affect our generations that come past us. So, you know, the decisions that I make, you know, like the massacre, those people went to bed at night. They were not feeling good about themselves after this massacre. So their emotions were passed on to their children. And then, you know, unbeknownst to them and their children's children. And so forth. So we don't know why, you know, the we have misery in our family, but we do know why, and we do know that it comes from the past. And it, you know, this is energy. It's just energy. It might not just be the energy of the spirit of our people. It's just the negative energy that happened. What happened during that time? And you know, this started a 2-year war. You know, the Lenni Lenape, all the Algonquin speaking people got together right afterwards and stood up for themselves, where, you know, most of the Dutch had to leave the area for a while and then the English returned. So you have not just the Native American energy, you have all negative energy in that concentrated one area. So, yeah, I agree. It's just you can't say that it's a person's spirit coming out of their body. It's energy, like interconnected. It's just like you said, the energy is now going through the water. It's going through the trees. It's going through the soil.
You know, I don't say this lightly, but I, you know, knowing my ancestry, I'm as white man can be. And earlier this year, Cindy took me on a journey through medicine. And we did this together. And along with a facilitator. And I've got to tell you, I've never felt any kind of connection to Native American legend or lore in any way, shape, or form until I had this moment. And when you were saying that, you know, you talk about the spirit animals, I would see things, I would be a part of things. And the rational mind is trying to control the journey. And as I'm journeying and I see the bear and I look down and I've got a bear claw, I'm like, oh, my spirit animal is the bear. I would hear this voice go, no, no. And then I'd see through the wolf's eyes and I'd be moving through the woods. I'm like, I'm the wolf. It's the wolf. No. And this voice would be like, stop putting it in a compartment. You're part of all of this, all of these, the snake, the bear, the wolf, the eagle, they're all part of you. And it was like, you know, I'm trying to go again by what I know of Hollywoodized versions that we each have this totem, this one animal that represents our soul. And it was so funny that here I have no concept of this. And the universe is telling me, no, let go of your ego. Stop thinking linear. We're all connected, man. Be kind to everyone and everything, because that's the importance. And treating us all, there's the color of our skin is so insignificant. And if we can just get past that stupid hump of red and black and yellow and green and whatever the hell, and just see each other for what we are. I don't see this lovely woman in front of me talking to me as a Native American. I see her as a representative of humankind and nature to share her history and stories. And I hope people will take that into account. Doesn't mean that we don't show respect for their ancestors and where you came from, but seeing each other as contemporaries, as humans, as opposed to Native American and Dave.
I so agree. We're all connected. We are human beings first. We have one universe, one verse, one energy. And, right, you know, we're connected on this whole earth. And, you know, the only thing that I am grateful for is, you know, being raised and born and raised as Native American, is that we are raised with that concept right away. We're raised to take care of Mother Earth, and we're raised to know that we are one with nature. We are raised that way. And that's one thing that we instill in our children and our grandchildren, that we are one with nature. But that concept is not just ours. That concept is the, you know, comes from the ancient, the Sanskrit and the other, the Buddhists and what, you know, all the other ancient religions, they have the same concept. And once we get back to the that fact that we are one and we're one with nature, then, I mean, the earth will be healed. There'll be less hatred. There'll be less, you know, less labels. You know, I'm one to tell you, I hate labels. I hate labels. I hate titles. You know, just call me Ty. That's it. You know, you can say, hey, you, and I answer. So, but we are just simple, one universe, one sound frequency, you know, and we have to stay balanced. We can't be on the left or the right. We have to stay balanced. We have to stay neutral. We have to love. We have to be in a state of awareness of our surroundings and to know that, you know, we are a part of the nature, the trees, the birds, and the animals. So, you know, I really agree with your statement.
It's been amazing to me since, because when I stop and I let go of ego and my mind at times, I can still feel that connectivity, and I love it. And I've told Cindy, when I got done, I was so open and fresh feeling. I was like, I never need to do that again. And now I want to do it again because I want to feel that full connectivity. And it's not just woo-woo drug-induced stuff. It was powerful, powerful medicine. People ask, well, what can I do? How do I talk to people? What can I do? NativeAdvancement.com. Please go check out that website, NativeAdvancement.com. I'll have that link in today's podcast episode as well. So for those of you watching live with us right now, you'll see that on your screen. For those of you listening to the show in podcast form, we will have that link on today's program. I do want to make a quick mention. We do have to take a break in a second. Next week, December 10th, we have a season 2 mini marathon of Holzer Files taking place on the Travel Channel, season 2. So starting, I think, at like 8 a.m. Central, and playing through 4 or 5 of the episodes that have already appeared this season. So you get a chance to catch up if you missed any. Next week, we will be back here for Holzer's Ghosts discussing the episode number 7, Devil in the Rock. Blood in the Water this week, Devil in the Rock next week. And we go to Cohasset and find more alarming stories, and one location literally bleeds into another in this history. And we get to investigate multiple locations, multiple layers of a story. That's next week on the Holzer Files on Travel Channel. And then you can join me here right after. I'll have special guests with me for that episode as well. And we've got a lot of other great guests that will be joining us throughout this season. For more of the best in paranormal talk radio, keep checking out darknessradio.com. You can check it out on all of your podcast formats. Just look for Darkness Radio and you'll find it. We'll be right back with more right after this. Hello and welcome. Thank you so much for tuning into the best in paranormal talk radio, and for those of you staying up late with us here this evening as we are doing a live stream. This is Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts, and tonight we are discussing season two, Edge, actually not Edge of the Veil. This is the Blood in the Water episode, and I'm sorry, we have the wrong one scrolling on the bottom of here. We're in episode number 6 of the series. Our guest for the remainder of the program, and we'll be taking some of your questions. We have Ty, who you saw on this evening's episode and is part of the Lenape tribe, has come here to talk to us and answer questions and be a part of the program with us. I'm putting up on the page again where you can find more information about the nativeadvancement.com. Could you explain to people really quickly what nativeadvancement.com is and what they can do and what resources they might find there?
Well, nativeadvancement.com is just a website that provides ancient native teachings, art, modern day art, resources for educators. And it just brings our life, instead of being in the past and the history, it shows that we still exist. And, you know, it just lets you in our world. So that's what nativeadvancement.com is.
I've got questions open now. If you're watching along with us on the live stream, if you put your questions in, I'll be able to watch along. We could try to discuss those bits of this investigation and tonight's episode. I want to also address, a lot of people think there's only a handful of episodes left. We have 13 episodes this week, folks. We are just about at the halfway point. Next week is truly our halfway point, and we still have a lot of great programming to bring to you this season. And I want to thank you for Shane and Cindy and Gabe Roth and Alexandra, the people at Painless and Discovery Networks and Travel Channel, for tuning into our show. All of the beautiful comments that we get, you know, doing a show like this, I half expect some bashing and some angry words, as I've seen for every other paranormal show. I got to tell you, I'm blown away week after week by the beautiful comments and love and support that is shown for this show. And I think it's because of what you see in the programming and the respect that we show to the other side, not jumping to the conclusion that everything's a demon. There's a place for that. People are investigating places that are known to have those demonic hauntings. We're just trying to understand history and follow up on the cases that were important to Dr. Hans Holzer and try to give you some current answers. Let's see. We do have a question here I want to get to for you, Ty. Kiyomi says, can you tell me about how many tribe members may have lived on that land?
Whew, I don't know how many tribe members lived on that land, but we were the largest Algonquin or largest speaking based people. We spoke Algonquin. We occupied all of New Jersey, lower parts of New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, all the way to the eastern shore of Maryland.
Christopher asks, Ty, my sister, there is blood on the grounds in so many places, as you just mentioned. And I'll tell you, Ty, it almost became a running joke to us because we should call this the Holzer Lenape files, because he worked so much on the East Coast, and every location we come across, mm-hmm. there's amazing, rich Lenape traditions and histories. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, not every story is tied to unrest of the Native Americans. There are other tragedies that have befallen, and I'm sure if we dig far enough back, we could probably find those spirits as well. But Christopher asks, what can we do to help the spirits that are on these lands that are unhappy or forgotten?
Well, I think you just said the word forgotten. I think we just have to be remembered. We're very peaceful people, even to this day. And we're going to sit in the back of the room until we're called upon. We're very humble. And until we're called upon, until these stories are brought to light, when they're brought to light, I think that's what's going to happen. The light always pierces the darkness. So I think that as soon as all these stories, the true stories, are brought to light, then we'll probably see peace on some of these places. That's a good question. That's a very good question.
We need to learn to get along, man. If we want to see, I want to mention really quickly here, and I'd like your thoughts on this. I don't know, I've been asked about these monoliths that are popping up. You had one that showed up in Utah, then one that popped up in Romania. Then now one has popped up in California. They're there and then vanish. And I was asked my thoughts on this. And I said, you know, with the hell house that 2020 has been, with political unrest, civil unrest, pandemics, so much angry and division, it's interesting how people are coming together to look at this mystery again. And when they're putting away the byproducts of anger and frustration and hatred, and what is this? And do I believe it's alien in nature? No. But it is interesting to note that since 2017, there has been a slow and steady leaking of disclosure taking place regarding UFOs and aliens. And in 2020, our government came out and said, yeah, that footage is real. All that footage that's been leaked is real. Those are unidentified flying objects. I'm sorry, unidentified aerial phenomena. Now, UAPs, they're trying to upgrade the cool code for them. They are real, and we do still have a very active investigative team looking into these cases. So I don't know if this is a part of an artistic installation or if this is part of a more well-orchestrated thing to get us out of our ego, out of our mind, and start looking at the bigger picture. That, as you said, Ty, we are all connected, no matter if it's Romania, Utah, or California, or wherever else these monoliths suddenly appear. It reminds us that we're one. And maybe they're copycats. Maybe the one in Utah truly was an art statement, and the rest are popping up. But it means people are coming together. They're doing things, and they're creating a mystery and a beauty that shows the awe and wonder of what we can create together. And if we can come together with that kind of interest and fascination, we could change the world, and it will take people getting outside of their comfort zones and learning where we've been so that we don't continue to make these mistakes.
I agree. And, you know, I think we're on the verge of an awakening, and that's why we see right now some of the unrest that we have. I think we're on the cusp of a change, and the spirits that you see that are in unrest know that the change is coming. So, you know, we're headed for peaceful times. We are definitely headed for peaceful times. You know, there's a higher respect for women. We see that in government. You know, there's a lot of interest in Native American history now, where, you know, there was an Indian Annihilation Act. That's still in the books, you know, so there's a change coming. And I think we're going to see, you know, different things like these monoliths that are, people want to distract us from this, this horror that we're trying to live in with the COVID and, you know, the wars and so forth, you know, and to take our interest into beauty or something interesting again.
Shannon asks, Ty, do you have a recommendation on things to do to help today's Native people?
Well, I know, you know, what's really terrible. The reservations have deplorable conditions. They were all set up to fail. As a matter of fact, our Lenni Lenape people had the first reservation in the United States. It was the Brotherton Reservation in Rancocas, where most of the people that ended up on the died of smallpox and other diseases. But the story remains the same. The reservation, I'm an urban tribe. You know, we have our own businesses, and we take care of our elders and our youth, and, you know, our youth go to college and so forth, and, you know, many generations. But the reservations were set up for failure. They didn't expect them to last this long. You know, and I know people probably will disagree with me because, you know, they want to keep a hold of that land. But if we can figure out how to help the reservation tribes, which are very poor, very, very poor, you know, forgotten about. No one knows about them. Do you hear about them? I don't hear about them.
In Minnesota, we hear about them. And we hear, oh, well, the casinos are taking care of all the Native Americans. Casinos are set up for that. They get millions of dollars. Every member of the tribe is paid handsomely. And I see the indigenous people, and they are not living the life people think they are.
No. I mean, they're living in conditions that we lived in 100 years ago. substandard housing, no cars, high alcohol and drug abuse. And, maybe we can just, one thing that we can do is, start a prayer chain just for that or something, so that we can send energy so that we can fix this situation. You know, it breaks my heart, and then, the girls are being stolen and sold into, for trafficking at a higher rate than anybody else because no one cares and no one's looking.
And I want to address that, in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, there has been an unprecedented amount of murder of Native American women. Nobody talks about.
And no one talks about it.
It's unbelievable.
I've
tried to reach out to people that have brought this to my attention and pointed these things out, and they won't go on the record. They won't talk about it. They're like, oh, hell no, I'm not bringing that hellstorm down on me, but you got to find somebody that will talk about it.
Wow.
And it's been hundreds of Native American women over the last few years that have died in not just drug-related ways or things that you would think. They're being murdered.
Yes. One's talking about it. One's talking about it. So, if we could find ways to help that way, that's where the true need is. That's where the true help is needed. So, that's a good question. And thank you.
Folks, I have to apologize. There's so much great dialogue going on, so many questions that they're scrolling by a little too quick. And I can't, I'm not a Mac guy. I'm new to this whole system. So I don't know how to scroll up. There's been a few questions. Somebody asked what the device was that we used called the gyroscope. It looks like a digital Ouija board. The two bulbs on the side are not actually part of the design, but what they do is it's if the static from the spirit can communicate with them, one side works yeses and nos, the other side stops the dial on letters, and it'll actually light up that letter. So we were hoping to get some kind of communication on that. We didn't, but while focused, RMB made himself known, and we began hearing other things throughout the house. So that's the tool. I believe our good friend Shane Pittman is in the chat room as well, and I think he answered that for some of the people. So I apologize if I missed that, folks. If you have questions I did not get to, please type them in and let us know. Oh, God, Lindsay Rutledge pops in and says, this is happening in Canada, too. It's considered a genocide with the Indigenous women. They go missing and are murdered.
Yes.
It's horrible. People don't know about this. So if you want to know, start educating yourselves on that. If you want to know what you can do to help, start letting people know this and tell people what's going on in today's society.
Yes.
2020, we're still treating everybody that's not white like trash and not reporting on it and not doing anything about it. And that needs to stop. That has to stop.
Yes.
Let's see. I'm sorry, trying to read these. Libby says, can Ty speak to how to change our education of American history to include their stories? And that's a great point. How do we get history to start examining these parts of our stories instead of just kind of forgetting them and just talking about everything, and now I know a lot of kids in history aren't learning anything prior to World War II.
No. The history, I say this all the time, history, it has been preserved in antiquity. And what I mean by that is the older memoirs, and I have tons of them, I have hundreds of them. The older memoirs are now digitized. They're digitized. And the true history of, the accounts of the ones that came over first and, they told about, Verrazano. Verrazano was the first ones to encounter the Lenni Lenape, my people right here on the Delaware River. But no one talks about that. But he has true accounts in his memoirs. So if we start revisiting these memoirs and publishing these, then we'll get a better respect of really what happened instead of this washed over history that we're learning.
Kitty Cat asks or mentioned, somebody asked earlier about what is a good offering for the spirits of the ancestors? Is there something, or again, is that Hollywoodized nonsense?
There are different ways that we do pay homage to the spirits. Like if we have a large dinner with a lot of people, we'll put a plate of food at the edge of the edge of the woods for the spirits. you know, there are different ceremonies that we have that, you know, we bless ourselves with the smoke of the sage. But there are different ways that you can pay homage to the spirits. But I think the biggest one is to recognize your own spirits within. Discern whatever is driving you so that you, those spirits do not rule you anymore. And what I mean by that is that everything is governed by a spirit. So I, you know, like I teach my children, if you have the spirit of jealousy, that you'll probably have stomach issues. Or the spirit of hatred, then you probably die from a hardened heart. So if we recognize the spirits that govern us so that we are light in spirit and always give honor to the creator, that he's created everything, then I think that's what we have to do. We have to concentrate on ourselves, not the spirits on the outside of us, but within us.
Daryl Jacobs asks, Ty, what is your position in your tribe?
My position, I am a volunteer. My father is the tribal chairman of the Nanticoke Lenni Lenape tribe here in Bridgeton, New Jersey. And I support him and I volunteer. I have, with my technology skills, I've been in computers since 1978. So I volunteer with that and whatever's needed, grant writing, and so forth, but I volunteer. That's my position.
And you did mention your father was in what position?
He's the chief.
The chief of the tribe.
He's the chief of the tribe. Yes.
You know, we do a lot of investigations, that people use sage to try to ward off spirits. Can you give me some insight? I'd love some real insight on how does that work? I mean, to me, it seems silly that just smoke.
It is.
It is. Push away a ghost. You know, if I was a ghost, I'd just turn my head and let the smoke go by. But yeah, what sage about
is,
that?
Yeah, it's very healing. Sage is very healing. Sage is a healing herb. Actually, I sell and market a tea blend that has sage in it. Sage is a all healer. It cleanses the blood. This is sage tea. So sage is very sacred to us. Sage is good for the liver. Your liver has 500 functions. So sage is good for the liver. Sage is good for the hair. Sage is good for the skin.
Oh, really? Okay.
Sage and rosemary. That's the two ingredients in my tea. Sage is good for Alzheimer's or any kind of, blood disorders, as well as sage smoke for cleansing the air.
I did an investigation at here in Minnesota in Stillwater at what's known as the Warden's House. And at the end of the investigation, they did a closing ceremony using sage. And I was standing right next to the practitioner and I reeked of sage. And I got in my car and as I was driving home, I had a sneezing fit. And all of a sudden, I see the cop lights go on behind me. And I'm like, and he pulls me over. And I roll down the window and he goes, yeah, I'm just we've been smoking a little weed tonight. I'm like, not the way
you think. Similar smell, yeah.
Not the way you think. He goes, what do you mean? I go, I'm a ghost hunter, and we were just using sage to help clean a spot. And he looks at me and he goes, did you really think that story was going to work? I go, I'm being serious. Look in my backseat. That's a bag of tools. And he goes, what kind of tools? So then all of a sudden I'm throwing myself under burglary tools. I'm like, K2 meters and ghost meters. I swear. And all of my teammates go driving by laughing, at me. But because I was sneezing, I had swerved a little. And that's why he pulled me over to make sure. So I had to get out on the side of the road and do all the tests. And he saw that I was not doing that nonsense. But it was just a funny moment to have dealt with that. One thing, too, in mentioning dealing with people of color, we all have to take back that responsibility. We're all guilty of making a joke, of saying a comment. And I am, I've got my daughter, who I love dearly, is half African-American. And I try not to see color boundaries. It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen and that we don't judge people irrationally or out of places of fear. So you have to start here. if you want to make the change out there, it starts, as Michael Jackson said, with the man in the mirror or the person in the mirror. Start changing and processing the way you relate to people. Don't propagate hate speech. Don't lump people together because of their belief system, their religion, their color, their sexuality. You know, if you are Christian or any religious beliefs, in no fashion, form, or otherwise, do any of the spiritual leaders say, love your brother as yourself, unless they're black, red, green, yellow, gay, straight. There's not, it's love one another.
That's love one another.
And we have to lock and load that. So that's an important aspect of this. Lindsay says, oh my God, sage does not smell like weed. You just put it inside. It can't.
Yeah, burnt herbs, they all kind of smell like. Yeah.
Maria has posted here, the Los Angeles County Native American Commission has a Facebook page at facebook.com/AI Commission. So you can find that as well. Thank you for putting that up, Maria, so that we've got that. I'm trying to see if there's a few of the other questions. Again, you guys are scrolling past so quick. I apologize. Cameron says, Dave, you just got some good sage. here's a question. Ari says, where can we purchase your sage tea?
Oh, on that same website, there's a link somewhere in there.
Okay.
I have another website, theindigenousway.com.
Okay.
Nativeadvancement.com,
there's a link, and then indigenousway.com.
Theindigenousway.com is the website where I have my herb teas and oils and, you know, articles. I'm multi-generational herbalist, so I have some articles on there on overall body health and spiritual health.
Here's another interesting question. I know we're coming to the end of the hour here, and I want to respect your time. It's late there. PJ says, can you discuss shamanism and how Native Americans differ from others?
You know, that's just another title that someone else labeled, probably a wise person. And in our tribe, the most wisest person that most people went to was normally a woman. So it's not, you know, the stereotypical movie kind of thing that you see, but it was the keeper of the herbs, the keeper of the keeper of the ways, the keeper of the stories, and it was most likely a woman. My grandmother was a very wise. They wrote a book about her, Amy Hill Hearth, the famous Peabody Award-winning author, wrote about my grandmother. Her name, and it's Strong Medicine Speaks, is the book. You can find that on Simon & Schuster and Amazon and all the bookstores. But that gives you an insight about how we regard women. But shamanism, that's just, you know, it's just another title. Like, who is your chief? We didn't have the concept of chief. You know, who's your tribal leader? We didn't have that concept. We were just huge families that lived together. If the family got too big, then you had to go to another family. You know, when they got married, they went to the wife's family. The men went to the wife's family. So I think that's going back to labels again. So if you get rid of labels, then you understand our people.
Right. Well, shamanism, medicine man, medicine woman. It's just you had healers, you had practitioners. Everybody had kind of jobs. Hunters.
Everybody had things they could do. Right. Exactly.
And this is how it was working. You know, and bringing that in, there's this spectrum. And I'd like to just see if you're willing to tell me, great, I won't push. I understand that there's a lot to the indigenous people and their tribes and their beliefs of what they don't want to share. But as we talked about UFO disclosure a little bit earlier, is there a thought behind that? You know, we hear that some of the cultures refer to them as star people. Do you believe that there are tribes on different planets that have interacted with us?
I believe that we're probably not the only one, because that would be more of a miracle than anything else, because, you know, there's energy everywhere. So, you know, just because we don't know doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So we just have to respect that it could be there. So I can't speak for everybody. Oh, thank you again. I can't speak for everybody in every tribe. However, you know, I can speak for myself. It's common sense that we're not the only energy. So, you know, and we're probably not as advanced as we think we are. You know, we think we're advanced, you know, but we still have telephone poles. If we were so advanced, we wouldn't have telephone poles and wires going through the earth.
And we haven't cured baldness. So that shows you how advanced we are. What about Bigfoot?
You know, I don't want to say I'm a skeptic or a non-believer or a believer. I really don't know. I just know that, you know, we have bears. We have black bears here. They could have big feet. So, you know, I believe there's something.
15 years of doing our radio show, Darkness Radio, we've spoken to many different people and people from some of the different tribes, and they've referred to them as just another tribe. And in some instances, tribes they do not want to mess with. The Bigfoot people, the Sasquatch, the Yeti, the Skunk Ape, the Yahweh, whatever they want to refer to, Yahwehs. So I just didn't know if you had something. You know, it was a few years ago, 2 years ago, I was in Wisconsin. And I was at one of the tribal casinos. We were doing a paranormal conference. And a very friendly gentleman sat down next to me. And we were both throwing down a few drinks. And he started to get a little conversational. And it was funny because it was late. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And he was part of the tribe. And I asked him something about the paranormal. And he kind of gave a little one of these. And he goes, well, you know, I can tell you, and all of a sudden, out of everywhere, it was like a group, about five or six of the employees came over, and they're like, hey, it's getting late. We should get you home and get you out of here safely. And he just looked at me and he goes, and they're like, you know what he's saying. He's had a few too many tonight, and they sent him on his way. But it was interesting. I saw the protection that they put in place about sharing some of the concepts, and I think that's great. But thank you for being so open to talking about the real issues Indigenous people face and have faced, and talking about your concepts and beliefs in the supernatural, for coming forward and spending some time and answering questions from our listeners, and for being a part of the Holzer File family and doing that episode, Ty. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me and inviting me into this world. And I enjoyed it immensely. And thank you, everybody, for your questions.
Yes, thank you all for staying up a little late with us. All new Holzer Files every Thursday on the Travel Channel. We've got, I believe, 7 more episodes. Our episode next week is Devil in the Rocks, and it's in Cohasset. It's a really amazing story that blew up for us. Multiple locations, a lot of strange things. Plus, you get to see Cindy stepping out of her comfort zone in a few ways in the way that she tries to communicate with the spirit world. And we get some really amazing activity. So I hope you'll check that out. Holzer Files again. Next week's episode is Devil in the Rock. I want to make sure that we also mention that there is on December 10th, there is a second season mini marathon of the Holzer Files on the Travel Channel, starting at around 8 a.m. Central Time. So check your local listings and times. And that's five of the episodes you've missed already this season. So you get a chance to catch up if you have not already watched them. So that's important as well to mention. And again, for more information on our guest, you can go check out the website, nativeadvancement.com. Ty, stay safe. Happy holidays.
Stay safe. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thank you all for tuning in and being a part of our world. You make our lives better, and we hope that we can shine a little light in your darkness as well. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.